the tombs. What good was that? She knew the turnings of a ruined maze. She knew the dances danced before a fallen altar. She knew nothing of forests or cities or the hearts of men. She said suddenly, "Will you stay with me there?" She did not look at him. He was in his illusory disguise, a white-skinned, cargish countryman, and she did not like to see him so. But his voice was unchanged, the same voice that had spoken in the darkness of the labyrinth. He was slow to answer. "Tanar, I go where I am sent. I follow my calling. It has not yet let me stay in any land for long. Do you see that? I do what I must do. Where I go, I must go alone. So long as you need me, I'll be with you in Havner. And if you ever need me again, call me. I will come. I would come from my grave if you called me, Tanar. But I cannot stay with you." She said nothing. After a while, he said, "You will not need me long there. You will be happy." She nodded, accepting, silent. They went on side by side towards the sea. Voyage. He had hidden his boat in a cave on the side of a great rocky headland, Cloud Cape it was called by the villagers nearby, one of whom gave them a bowl of fish stew for their supper. They made their way down the cliffs to the beach in the last light of the gray day. The cave was a narrow crack that went back into the rock for about 30 feet. Its sandy floor was damp, for it lay just above the high tide mark. Its opening was visible from the sea, and Ged said they should not light a fire, lest the night fishermen out in their small craft along the shore should see it and be curious. So they lay miserably on the sand, which seemed so soft between the fingers and was rock hard to the tired body. And Tanar listened to the sea a few yards below the cave mouth, crashing and sucking and booming on the rocks, and the thunder of it down the beach eastward for miles. Over and over and over it made the same sounds, yet never quite the same. It never rested. On all the shores of all the lands in all the world, it heaved itself in these unresting waves, and never ceased, and never was still. The desert, the mountains, they stood still. They did not cry out forever in a great dull voice. The sea spoke forever, but its language was foreign to her. She did not understand. In the first gray light, when the tide was low, she roused from uneasy sleep and saw the wizard go out of the cave. She watched him walk barefoot and with belted cloak on the black-haired rocks below, seeking something. He came back, darkening the cave as he entered. "Here," he said, holding out a handful of wet, hideous things like purple rocks and orange lips.
"What are they?"
"Mussels, off the rocks. And those two are oysters, even better. Look, like this." With the little dagger from her keyring, which she had lent him up in the mountains, he opened a shell and ate the orange mussel with seawater as its sauce.
"Oh, you don't even cook it? You ate it alive!"
She would not look at him while he, shamefaced but undeterred, went on opening and eating the shellfish one by one. When he was done, he went back into the cave to the boat, which lay prow forward, kept from the sand by several long driftwood logs. Tanar had looked at the boat the night before, mistrustfully and without comprehension. It was much larger than she had thought boats were, 3 times her own length. It was full of objects she did not know the use of, and it looked dangerous. On either side of its nose, which is what she called the prow, an eye was painted, and in her half-sleep she had constantly felt the boat staring at her. Ged rummaged about inside it a moment and came back with something, a packet of hard bread, well wrapped to keep it dry. He offered her a large piece.
"I'm not hungry."
He looked into her sullen face. He put the bread away, wrapping it as before, and then sat down in the mouth of the cave.
"About 2 hours till the tide's back in," he said. "Then we can go. You had a restless night. Why don't you sleep now?"
"I'm not sleepy."
He made no answer. He sat there, in profile to her, cross-legged in the dark arch of rocks. The shining heave and movement of the sea was beyond him as she watched him from deeper in the cave. He did not move. He was still as the rocks themselves. Stillness spread out from him, like rings from a stone dropped in water. His silence became not absence of speech, but a thing in itself, like the silence of the desert. After a long time, Tanar got up and came to the mouth of the cave. He did not move. She looked down at his face. It was as if cast in copper, rigid, the dark eyes not shut but looking down, the mouth serene. He was as far beyond her as the sea. Where was he now? On what way of the spirit did he walk? She could never follow him. He had made her follow him. He had called her by her name, and she had come crouching to his hand, as the little wild desert rabbit had come to him out of the dark. And now that he had the ring,